Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Cannabis Insider. My name is Elliot Lane. I think I said that as cool as I possibly could have, and it was still nerdy. That's okay. We have accepted that. I'm here alone today. Javier Jase will not be joining us. He is on vacation with lacking of internet. I think those are just excuses for him to avoid seeing me. But you know what? I'll deal with that. I'll sit in my depression later. Regardless, thrilled to be doing this. We're going to talk a little bit about news. If you're in the chat, if you're listening in, drop a one, say hello. We have two amazing guests today that we want you and your participation. We want your questions. We want you to let us know what you think and ask them what you're thinking. So we're going to have, first off, Ransom K. Shepherd, co-founder and president of Canvas. That's Canvus.com. And Michael Johnson, CEO of Metric. Right. Very interesting conversations. I'm very excited for both. Very different conversations, too. So it's going to be an interesting shift for me. If I do it well, I think you guys owe me a drink. That's all I'm going to say. Or a joint. This is a cannabis show. I apologize. That being said, y'all, what's happening in the world today? What do y'all think about New York City's first opening? When are they going to open up a second? Right. When's the second dispensary coming? Well, we have some answers. The second dispensary is going to be in Union Square, called, I think, the Union Square Travel Agency. Obviously nothing to do in the name with cannabis, so we'll let them deal with the issues around SEO and searchability online. But that being said, looks like soft opening is going to be on February 13th. They're going to be offering 51% of their proceeds to the Doe Fund, which offers quite a bit of support. I think tutoring, housing, things of that nature to marginalized communities. So if you are in New York, you support cannabis, you consume cannabis, y'all go support this opening. Get out there, right? You know, support the industry. And honestly, a lot of people are glad to see some of these cooler, more, not necessarily mom and pop shops, but, you know, owned by non-MSO communities. You know, it doesn't really matter to me. But that being said, this is a cool opening that you guys should look at. What's with MSOS change agent? Well, man, we didn't end the year on a high note. As you probably know, you know, just plummeted after SAFE. And it happens, honestly, every time. So, like, let's put this into reality, right? Every time we see SAFE come to play, every time we see anything on the regulatory and political level come to play, people get really excited. They get really anticipatory of the possibilities, right? And of course, the stock market's very emotional. It's a very emotional beast. So it trades on this fundamental of potential. And then when it doesn't happen for the seventh time, it's all doom and gloom. However, you know, just take a step back, right? So I have conversations with a ton of people in the space daily. They are all business as usual. Now, granted, there will be a lot of pressure on small businesses and mid-sized businesses. That's not to say this won't be a difficult year for some. However, it's not the end of the world, right? MSOS, it's struggle busting right now. A lot of cannabis stocks are struggle busting right now. You talk to Alan Brockstein, he doesn't like them because they invest, I think, 80% in tier one MSOs or something of the nature. But you know, he's very tier two oriented. So how you choose to invest your money, what you see being the most rewarding stock to invest in, should determine what ETF you're investing in. If you like Verano, GTI, if you like Curaleaf and Trulieve, those are companies that maybe you should look at MSOS as well. Right, but if you like Jushi, if you like Air Wellness, if you like Ascend, those are stocks that maybe you should look elsewhere. I mean, I love Ascend and Jushi. The value they drive from one dispensary is incredible. But I love the expansiveness of Verano and the clean balance sheet of GTI, or clean as you can get cannabis is GTI. Right. So how you trade cannabis? I just more power to you. You know, we're all just dipping in here, man. That being said, you know, MSOS is not going away, right? You know, same with these other stocks. They're not going away. Be patient. You know, Pablo Zwanich, an analyst for Cantor Fitzgerald, says wait 18 to 24 months for really any return. You should still be buying the dip. What up, Louise? How you doing? I like the good vibe emoji you're giving me there. But appreciate you asking, change agent. Drop any more stocks you want us to look into. You know, a couple more stocks I looked at today. Unity Road, which is the franchising umbrella of Item 9 Labs, OTC listed INLB. I'm pretty excited about that. They get the next license in New Jersey, right? I think they had the first. Look at that one bar there, Aaron. Thanks, dude. That's awesome. But Item 9 Labs is a really cool and honestly fast rising retailer in North America. They're also in Canada. The Unity Road franchising model is very present. I think they were one of the first in one of the Dakotas, I think North. But that being said, I like Item 9 Labs. I think it's a big move for them to get in New Jersey. It was a local entrepreneur that opened that one. If I'm looking at others, Organigram, OGI on the NASDAQ had a pretty solid earnings report. One note stuck out to me. If I'm looking at this, generated a 30% increase in yield per plant. That's crazy. Yeah, I'm assuming their yield wasn't much off industry average before that. If it was, then this is a correction. If it wasn't, then this is silly. So that to me, I'm like, okay, y'all make more money from what you're already doing. That's fantastic. I think they claim still the number three position in Canada for gummies and hash, number one in milled flour and maritimes. They have the fourth consecutive quarter of positive adjusted EBITDA. There are great companies in Canada. I think Tilray, although you might just consider them a beverage company now, is their beverage business is going strong, albeit their overall revenue down pretty significantly. So look at these companies how you will. Organigram had strong earnings. ACB is on the upswing, and they have been for a few months now. But these are all just ways to diversify your portfolio and what you're looking at. Akerna shares are skyrocketing today. KERN on the NASDAQ, right? After their announcement of selling 365 cannabis for just under $3 million, if memory serves, 2.8. So Kerna, I don't know. I don't necessarily trust the stock, but I wonder if this is the last M&A we'll see from them in terms of selling. Everybody wants to right size. Everybody wants to cut costs this year. Akerna is already active in that. And I wonder if there's further plans to continue. But that said, this is a really interesting move to jump back into the fray of things here. Whew. What do you think, y'all? Any other stocks you want to cover? We got Tilray. We did Aurora. We did some MSOs. We did MSOS, right? All right. So with that being said, y'all, if you're in New York, go support. If you're in Wisconsin or Minnesota, could be some movement there soon. West Virginia, some interesting news. Kentucky is trying to get it on the ballot this year. My home state, if you couldn't tell, I'm a Louisville Cardinal fan. But that being said, it looks like we're going to get some more movement, I think, in the next year on more access. So with that being said, you're here to hear from just way smarter people than me. And I'm pumped to make that happen. So let's start with Ranson Shepherd, co-founder and president from Canvas. Aaron Thomas, let's bring him over. All right, Ranson, what's up, man? Welcome in. How are you?
Elio, what's up, man? Good afternoon to you guys. I'm doing well, man.
Good. Good afternoon, dude. Thank you for being here with us and for spending the time. This is your first time on the show, so we always do this for every first timer. You got to tell us, how did you get into cannabis, my friend?
Legally or illegally?
Whatever you're willing to tell us. No, ideally, the more interesting one.
No, definitely. Thank you for having me on board, man. Great job to you guys. We definitely hear a lot of good stuff that you guys are putting out. And obviously, the introduction that you guys just did is amazing for, just people watching, listening in, tuning in. So great job to you guys, first of all. I've been heavily involved in the industry from a very young age. And I think on my standpoint, growing up in Hawaii, being Native Hawaiian, it's kind of surrounded in our culture. And as you guys, the people that have been to Hawaii, it's a very beautiful place, but it's also a very close-knit place too. Mm. And rich, deep history into, the land, the ocean, and everything else about it. So cannabis-wise, it's kind of always been there. But, I've never really put a lot of focus coming through university, school, and all the good stuff. But when I got the opportunity, a lot of it came through a family member of mine that, really could foresee certain things. And he had a lot of experience within the California market, the early days. And, entering into Arizona and Nevada back in the day, it was very crawl, walk, and run approach. So, that was kind of the early start from there, definitely through family and, definitely being around the culture the majority of my life.
All right. So you listed off some interesting markets there, Ranson, right? You started in Hawaii as a native, which yep. I think they just came out with some potential news. I don't think I want to say if it's news, but it looks like they might start rolling downhill a little quickly now. But you entered in some pretty interesting markets, right? Nevada is very competitive. Arizona started off very strong, and I think is still strong. But again, you know, some pricing worries there. You know, how do you dive in to cannabis? And remind me, when did you get into cannabis?
So I got the early start in 2010, you know, as far as diligence, doing homework. And, you know, as far as, you know, entering in a medical market like Arizona at the time. And if everybody remembers well, that was a lottery-based approach. Mm-hmm. And you know, through the network, we had a very, very close friend who was able to get one of the lottery gifted licenses. And then at that time, you know, it kind of gave us the ability to kind of work alongside, understand, manage, et cetera, really do our homework and due diligence before entering heavily into Nevada. We're based in Las Vegas, Nevada, you know, as far as the main operation structure of things. So we needed to do our homework and provide proof of concept before coming back to Nevada. So in Nevada, you know, jumping off in, you know, the law change happened in 13, you know, 14 applications started. And, you know, first operation started open around 15, 16. And, you know, like you said, Nevada is a ultra competitive market, but, but that's in regards to a lot of things, right? You know, you've got a strong gaming industry here.
True.
You have a lot of strong other economic impact drivers here. And, you know, we have a lot of things that are making the state and the city exciting now. You know, you've got professional sports exploding from the Golden Knights. Now we got the Raiders and, you know, the list goes on. But in regards to cannabis, how you dive in, do your homework.
Just to clarify for our audience here, you're not plant touching, right? You are a provider of professional services, I think governance. You know, tell us a little bit more about each service you offer this industry.
Absolutely. So, you know, quick color context on my side, I definitely have licenses that my name is associated on.
Okay.
That personally under me, my groups, my companies, my partners, my ventureships I'm a part of. Canvas was a venture that I got the luxury and opportunity to participate in with some longtime standing friends and mentorships. And we've seen the great need and value around solutions and services driven around facts and data. Because there's a lot of times, as you know, speak to very often, sometimes guys get in the feeling of, you know, they don't want to call their baby ugly, but sometimes it is. And, you know, they rush into the industry without doing the necessary things, right? And, you know, instead of selling the facts to the people, they sell their concepts of what they think could work. Mm-hmm. Oh, this happened in this garage. Or my boy on the street said this, mm-hmm. right? It's driven by standardization. So with Canvas, the ultimate goal was to focus on every segment of the space, cultivation, production, retail, distribution, data, etc., but using massive wealth of knowledge and experience from the teams that we've put together over all the years on the license side. And I'll give you an example. I've been a part of the LSU project. I'm still a part of that project, you know, with my partners down there in a medical heavy state. So we got a chance to understand research and studies, understand a tight medical market. Mm. I'm part of multiple native tribal contracts and managing contracts, so working with the native tribes and understanding that. And that's a great win for me because, you know, being Native Hawaiian, it really ties to the heartstring of things.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a part of multiple receivership structures, working with the state system and the court to go restructuring, reorganizing. And then, like I said earlier, I have multiple licenses underneath my name. So the Canvas was just another complement and enhancement tool to be hyper-focused around the details to help businesses thrive, but also help turn businesses around and, you know, always be focused on value and contribute value.
Awesome. I mean, there's about five different follow-up questions here, but let's start with receiverships, man. I mean, Cool. Everybody, a lot of people are expecting. Yeah, you said the word. You said it, man. I got the follow-up for you, right? And it's not necessarily a fun one, but, you know, when thinking about 2023, a lot of people are expecting asset seizures. You know, people are expecting bankruptcies, but how can people, you know, do you expect receiverships to maybe create companies, i.e. think of the CEO of Ease, right? Went through a receivership and now is honestly expanding that company to new heights, mm-hmm. right? So it's not necessarily a failure. It could be a survival, but talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing.
You know, I think for me, you know, speaking from experience on that, so I was a part of the very first receivership in Nevada. And, you know, I was a part of a great team as far as operators. And I worked hand in hand with the receiver, which is the office of the court. And as everybody knows, in the cannabis space, there's no bankruptcy laws yet because we're not on a federal scale. So each state program has got to operate on a case-by-case, state-by-state program model through the receivership. And, you know, some of the classics, right? You got negligence, you've got, you know, mismanagement of funds, et cetera, et cetera. What the receivership taught me and allowed me to participate in and understand was really take a look at the protection of the space, meaning, you know, you got damagees, you got investors, creditors, shareholders, you've got workers, you've got labor, you got state and local jurisdictions that, you know, haven't been paid. So there's a lot of, you know, parties in between that's been damaged. And, you know, the teams are tasked with the luxury of trying to, you know, dig themselves out of that hole. And the ones that can make it successful and get the positive outcome have done well. The ones that are constantly fighting that long-term battle of a receivership, it's going to be an ongoing thing. So when you made the comment to those guys from Ease, you know, that's a great case. That's a great use case. It's a great study to see, man. They're really expanding and making it happen. But a lot of times, not all of that, you know, not a lot of times it happens like that, right? Because like anything, any case, there's always two sides of the coin, right? You got a good side, you got a bad side. But like anything else, you got to find balance. And, you know, I really put a lot of emphasis and time into the people. If you don't have the right people on the team, you don't have them in the right spots, I don't care what you're doing. You can be painting a wall or selling toilet paper. It ain't going to be successful.
Right. Now, let's talk a little bit about Nevada specifically. You know, we've seen a couple companies there. I spoke to an operator on Tuesday who, you know, they're self-claiming to be, you know, a decently small operator. But that being said, you know, they see flexibility out of that. We've seen two very large, really one very large cultivator and company go under in Nevada. Another one that just wasn't a great one, but another public company go under in Nevada. You know, what is survival like in that market? What is the key to succeeding in Nevada that maybe new operators should consider when entering that market?
You know, one thing about Nevada, it's a very entrenched crawl, walk, and run approach model here. You know, because there's a lot of long-standing families, a lot of long-standing relationships, and it's truly a very tight-knit community here to where they're going to take their time on things, and they're going to try to pull from other previous successful models. But like anything else, everything's always 20/20 hindsight after the fact. You know, as a matter, I don't care if it's regulation enforcement or operating, right? You got to find balance in those things. But, you know, to be small and flexible and move, to example, have, you know, one conversation instead of having 10 conversations and leading by committee, you're going to be more flexible. You're going to be more nimble. You're going to be more aggressive. So I see the luxury in that. But, you know, as you scale and as you get bigger, as we've seen in the space, you know, sometimes it's tough. And I actually know those guys that they're talking about, the big, you know, cultivator that is going through their own restructuring format. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll never talk bad on anybody, but I'll just speak to the facts, right? Everybody's going through the growing pains. If somebody tells you that they're not, yeah, maybe look a deep under the hood, right? But it's just one of those things where slow and steady, crawl, walk, and run, communicate, be transparent, be open, work with your regulators and enforcement guys, and find a balance. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's learning as we go, but like anything else, you got to lock down your business model. You got to know your business better than anybody else. If somebody knows it better than you, you got real problems.
You have a favorite market, Ranson, a favorite state in how they've rolled out their legalization efforts?
Whoo, man, that's a tough one, isn't it?
threw it at you.
Man, I like it. You know, to be honest, I can only speak to the Nevada market on a very high level because I'm based here on a day-to-day, and I've seen other markets open up. And, you know, it's not right or wrong, good or bad, right? It's just different. Everybody's got their own way of doing things. You know, we're seeing what's going on the East. We see what happened out here in the West. We see what's happening now in the South. So, you know, I really take into consideration and enjoy to step back and see what everybody else is doing and learn from them.
Right? That's a great political answer. Yeah, you're running for office, aren't you, Ranson?
No. In Nevada, though, I got to give it to the team here. You know, there's been some good things. There's been some things that we had to work on. But, you know, there are some things that's happening right now in the market to where they're looking at tax and how it's impacting the smaller mom and pop businesses. Mm-hmm. They're looking at fair market value and how that is impacting how you tax. They're also looking at, you know, the basis of the regulation enforcement. You know, like everybody's got some tough jobs on that now. But as far as the way they rolled it out, we rolled it out aggressive. You know, July 1st, 2017 came quick, man. First stores opened up in 2015. So within about, you know, 2 year span, they went right into wreck. And then it took about, you know, 3 years to kind of hit rhythm and stride. And then COVID hit. Right? Mm-hmm. Then COVID hit in 2020. And as we all seen, Elliot, you know, people got used to that sugar high, right? Of that stimulus checks, unemployment checks, people at home. So, you know, people are spending crazy money sitting at home. And then when that thing corrected in 2021, 2022, you started to separate the real players from the pretenders in regards to operators. And mm-hmm. that's kind of what we're seeing now as far as the correction of industry, right? Especially within Nevada. And that's why, you know, to speak to the two cases that you talked about, those big operators, you know, I don't know what was their challenge internally, but, you know, I hope they figure it out, man. You know, like everybody mm-hmm. else, you know.
Yeah, well, one still trying. The other, the last thing on their press release was everybody's been let go, period. That was it. So, I mean, it's a time, right? You're going to see some more of that. Unfortunately, you're going to see a lot of restructuring, a lot of receivership. But I think you're going to see people separate themselves. Yep. And I'm a glass half full person. If you haven't figured that out from this podcast, you know, then I'm not doing something. But I tend to think that I'm excited to see who uses this as a way to strengthen themselves. And honestly, there's a lot of operators and want to hear it or don't want to hear it. The MSOs are all saying the right things right now. And they're all saying that their cost structure, you know, they're trying to cut costs. They're trying to balance themselves, right? Now, whether they do or not remains to be seen, right? You know, I think actions speak louder than words and or earning reports speak louder than words. But it's going to be interesting to see. That said, man, tell us a little bit about your goals, you know, over the course of the next year. Where do you see Canvas ending in 2023?
You know, right now is for the main focus of Canvas right now is focused on the current commitments and obligations that they do have with the client base that they do have. Really tighten up the positioning, get efficient, get effective, you know, really analyze the data, analyze the analytics, develop the case studies and the models. And then with the new markets that are coming online for the company as a whole, because we're attacking the East Coast very aggressively right now, is utilize the massive wealth of experience and knowledge that we have coming from the West, the South, and coming into their side to say, hey, here's some of the pain points that we went through. Try to avoid these pain points. You know, here's what we did to avoid those pain points. And don't take my word for it. Let me show you facts. Because, you know, like I said earlier, that's where it's at, right? Is just put everything on the facts. And then, you know, that's part of the key focus for Canvas is focusing on what we have currently, where we're going future-wise, and being efficient, being effective, focus on value, drive value, and constantly provide solution services. If the, you know, if the deals don't work out, hey, main thing we separate amicably, normal fall. But the deals that do work out, win. You know, not just go there and take up space. I don't care if a small, you know, social equity operator, small mom and pop, or you're a big guy. Win. And the way you win is not competing with anybody else. You're competing with yourself. What are you doing to improve your cost to produce? What are you doing to improve your cost of goods sold? And what are you doing to improve your tax considerations and the strategies around that? But also, what are you doing to invest into your people and your team? Because that's what a lot of the MSOs are going through right now, and as me and you can talk about for hours on end, they can't approach every market as the same. There is no cookie-cut model, right? Every market has its unique challenges and its unique opportunities. And let's get even granular. Every zip code has its own unique opportunities. Every local jurisdiction has its own unique opportunities. So when you're talking about a national role on national scale on the MSO platform, those are great things to talk about, right? But when you really dig into the operating model and me being an operator, being in the industry for quite some time now and understanding the day-to-day, you know, headaches and grinds, I'm not taking a look at it from a balance sheet, P&L sheet, general ledger, you know, the next report. I'm looking at it from a solution-driven troubleshooting model from an operator standpoint, right? That's where you're going to have to win. Because if you don't win there, you don't have a business. You have a hobby at that point. You know, just go and give it away or go to the casino and gamble away.
Awesome. Ranzen Shepherd, co-founder and president of Canvas, thank you for joining us today. We will talk again soon. I'm anxious to see how you move through the year ahead, my friend, you know, with what you're focusing on. I imagine you're going to be pretty damn busy. So my friend, hopefully we see you in April at our Miami conference. Outside of that, man, really appreciate your time and can't wait to talk to you again.
And Elliot, thank you so much. You know, hopefully come April, I still have a little bit more hair and I don't go completely bald. So, you know, definitely thank you, man. I appreciate everybody and appreciate you guys, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Easy, buddy.
All right. All right. Awesome. Thank you, Ranzen, again, for being here with us. That was very interesting and a nice kind of fresh take on Nevada. And, you know, we haven't really heard much of that from the Southwest. So, you know, thanks again to him. With that being said, very excited for our second interview. Thank you for tuning in, Q Brooks and PDX4EST. PDX4EST? I don't know. You choose. But Planet 13, Q, I like them a lot. I think they've been very operationally focused over the past few months. They're expanding or looking to drive further retention in their Las Vegas store, but they're also, of course, you know, focused in California and Florida, growing there. So, you know, they are busy, but strong, very, very strong assets. And you have to take notice of them. I think they're one of 15 companies with $100 million market cap or more. So they are one that you need to keep an eye on. That being said, let's do it. Let's jump to our second guest of the day, Michael Johnson, CEO of Metric. Mr. Johnson, welcome in, sir. How are you?
Just living the dream. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well, man. Enjoying the day, hearing about Nevada. I'm about to hear about every market on the planet with you, I think. But that being said, man, where are you calling in from, by the way?
We're in Lakeland, Florida. That's kind of where the business has started in one way, shape, or form 30 years ago.
What is it with Florida, man? Everybody's in Florida. Everybody's moving their headquarters to Florida. I mean, listen, no judgment. Props. But I'm just curious, like, is it the tax rate there? Like, what's attractive?
There's a lot of great things going on in Florida. I mean, we happen to have been here for, you know, the original founder. You grew up here, and that's kind of where it came from. But yeah, we've got a ton of people moving in. We're a little closer to the Tampa Bay area, which is certainly faster growing cities. And, you know, people like the weather, people like Tom Brady. The no state income tax rate is certainly attractive as well.
Well, it sounds like Tom Brady's got at least another decade in him, right? But that being said, Michael, tell us a little bit about you, right? You didn't found Metric, but you are the head honcho now. So how'd you end up as the CEO here?
That's a great opportunity. I came across Metric in kind of a happenstance way. The folks here that have put it together over, you know, like I said, almost 30 years, have really been focused, laser focused on trying to put together a product that is meaningful and certainly has been able to break through a lot of areas and a lot of states in the cannabis space. I joined kind of intrigued by what the opportunity looked like, kind of intrigued by the opportunity to grow, to be a part of something. And our founder had been at it for a good long time. And we kind of started being laser focused on government. The product was built, you know, to make it easier for the government. But you know, over the past handful of years, Metric has evolved, and there's a number of different use cases for Metric. And a lot of folks use Metric as their primary solution and their primary system of record. And we're doing the very best we can to be open a little bit. It's definitely, before I took over earlier in 2022, definitely a lot of conversation about Metric being a bit of a black box. And that's certainly not the desire. And we want to do the very best we can to provide the best experience for folks that are trying to build their businesses and trying to grow the legal market.
Yeah, I think if you looked up regulatory or regulation in the dictionary, Metric might be in the definition. Let's set the stage a little bit for those that, you know, are maybe, you know, looking to invest in the space, right? They don't, you know, go too deep into the actual operations of it. What do you specifically do for these companies, for the markets in cannabis in the U.S.?
We provide the kind of the full view of the entire seed to sale tracking infrastructure. It's really the system of record for the entire supply chain. Different states, actually every state, one way, shape, or form, requires some level of compliance. Generally speaking, they want to be able to track at any point in time the entire supply chain in a closed loop. And so Metric is primarily that, a tracking system. There's a lot of folks that use there's a lot of folks that use Metric primarily as their system of record, and so we actually see more than half of our licensees use Metric exclusively in terms of software, and over 70% of cultivation. So being able to support the legal market, being able to underpin the legal market and make the legal market successful is really what Metric's been able to do.
Yeah, it's not an easy it's not easy, man. Being the system of record, and you know, a lot of systems have to integrate with yours, correct?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you're using different systems that are gonna that need to get either data in Metric or out of Metric, we definitely integrate quite a bit. Over 600 different providers. Not really any different than any other software business. You know, that's at the enterprise level.
Awesome. So let's chat a little bit about your overall perspective here. Right. Let's look at the cannabis market at large. And you work in every state, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Not every state right now.
Okay. So, I mean, what markets have you seen roll out effectively, roll out successfully, versus, you know, markets that may have struggled a little bit, taken a little bit of time to get online? Tell us about your perspective of these markets.
Yeah, there's a number of different states that have struggled, and there's a number of different states that I think have found success. The difference between, you know, the states that are on one end of the spectrum or another one is clarity in the rules and regulations. Most folks kind of look at Metric as, you know, the state, and this is what's forcing us to kind of stop products from getting into the black market. That's not what Metric's designed to do. Metric is a tracking system that tracks products throughout the life cycle. It's not dissimilar from many other industries that have products that are tracked throughout the entire supply chain for resiliency and public health. And that's where Metric lives to support that. Now, because typical states don't have a help desk, mm-hmm. And they have challenges with folks understanding exactly what the rules and regulations look like, you are in a situation where a lot of folks will kind of struggle a bit in terms of, you know, how do I do this? What are the rules look like? And so Oklahoma's is a pretty good example. And we went live officially about 6 months ago. And so it's not like folks are required to take a test to understand what the laws are or understand what the rules and regulations are. Mm-hmm. They're written as legal rules and regulations. And so that's not necessarily the easiest thing for anybody to pick up on. It's kind of a funny thing that pretty much every law in the land is like that. You probably passed, you know, your driver's test at 16 and, you know, had to make sure you could pass the, you know, understood the rules of the road. No one's tested on that since then, I bet. So it's an interesting thing. Even if you had questions on it, it's not like the state has a help desk that you can call and say, hey, I have a question on this law. Laws change all the time. It's deemed to be your responsibility as a citizen to seek out what those changes are and to understand them. Metric frequently is one of those sources, I guess, and one of the resources for folks that they can reach out to and understand. I take support calls. I listen to them. It's important that we give the best service we can to the folks that use Metric and to the folks that that want to integrate into Metric. And the vast majority of the conversations I have with folks are people that are trying to do things the right way, trying to understand what the rules are, and sometimes they're not as easy. And so I think we play a really important role in helping folks be successful and understand what they need to do to have a successful and legal business.
How do you innovate that, out of curiosity? I mean, as a company, how do you continue to grow and progress what you offer this industry if you're so focused on the informational side and regulatory education that you offer?
Yeah, innovation. I mean, so Metric did not start out in the cannabis space. We definitely have done other things. We continue to do other things. Innovation in terms of usability and in terms of how people interact with the supply chain allows us to be more flexible. So how do you get data into Metric? How do we reduce the number of clicks? How do we reduce the speed for which data gets into Metric or can be pulled out of Metric? Those types of things. So the user experience is absolutely at the forefront. Performance of the system is certainly something we pay very close attention to. Metric is an enterprise level system on par with an Oracle or an SAP. Those systems function a little bit different than Instagram, you know, or things aren't. Enterprise level systems don't generally, you click and something happens immediately. Generally, there's a bit of a lag. And ours is no different. But the reality is most of the folks that interact with Metric are not used to those types of systems, and their expectations are higher. They expect faster, stronger, better performance, and we need to honor that. From the government side, performance level generally is on par with the systems that they use. From a typical user that expects, you know, the exact same kind of response that you would get in just typing out a Google search, that's something that can be quite challenging. It's something that we've been incredibly dedicated to, definitely over the past year, and I look forward to dramatic improvements in the performance of the product and the experience that folks have with the solution over the next year.
Fantastic. Great answer, man. I'm curious, you know, so there's a lot of ifs, ands, and buts in this industry, but, you know, if there is a federal catalyst one day, right, offers the opportunity for growth like we haven't seen before, whether it's access to capital through banking or if it's full on federal legalization, cross state cross-state commerce, whatever it may be. But I'm curious, does that open up, what does that do for you? Does that open up opportunity for you? Does it open up a lot more competition for you? I'm just very curious how that affects the Metric company.
It really depends on how it will happen. For the most part, we're agnostic in terms of what the next phase of legalization looks like. Whether or not there's federal legalization, if every state is illegal, there's certainly challenges as to how you evaluate crossing state lines. You obviously have a number of issues like 280E and folks that are trying to protect the intellectual property and the strains that they've developed. So we pay really close attention to that. We want to be as supportive as we can to those folks. But and for us, it's really about focusing on what's in front of us, paying attention to the states that we're in, the states that we're not in, and the new states that are going to come online so that we can get the best experience and make sure that Metric continues to be the foundation for which folks can build their businesses.
I love that, man. So what are you excited for, right? Like what gets you out of bed in the morning for Metric? Like, yes, I can't wait to work on this.
I get excited when we hear things that are folks have challenges with Metric or they have ideas. Everybody's got an idea. We have folks that have said, why doesn't it do this or can it do this? And we're able to put that into action. Metric, we completely transformed the leadership team over the last 6 to 9 months. Just about everybody on our leadership team is either in a brand new role or brand new to Metric in the last year.
Wow.
Really shifted our focus to be much more much more upfront and center with all stakeholders in the ecosystem and really do the very best we can to provide that level of value that I think wasn't always perceived. And so for us, being able to start to turn that corner, build those relationships with folks that, perhaps weren't always excited about Metric or, maybe didn't always say the best things or felt like it was some kind of a bane in the legal market. We're turning that around. And a lot of it is just helping people understand what we do. And a lot of it's making dramatic improvements to the product, dramatic improvements to connectivity. We've worked really, really heavily on our API to make it much more robust and something that's stronger because there are a number of folks, over 600 integrators, many of which have built their businesses only in Metric states. And because of their connectivity that they're able to have with Metric. And we want to support that. We want to support those businesses because they're going to help make the legal market even more effective, even more robust, and certainly more resilient in the continued kind of ups and downs that we'll see as it matures.
Are you seeing receptiveness to people getting on the phone with you that may have had ire towards you in the past?
Yeah, we are. And that's not to say, that ire's gone. It's not. And folks, I think when they figure out and they get deep into, especially it's actually really quite refreshing when you're in a non-Metric state. And then folks are like, yeah, well, this is like, you don't know what it's like to be able to work with Metric and it just works. And I think that's not the experience that everybody has, depending on where they're at, whether it's a different state or a different country. And that reliability and that system of record really is foundational. There's certainly a number of areas that Metric can improve upon and really some valid gripes that folks have, and we pay very close attention to those. But the reality is it works. It does what it says it's supposed to do. And we're very proud of that because it's hard to do that at scale. I mean, we're talking tens of millions, literally over hundreds of millions of plants that have been tracked since the inception of Metric. And all that data exists and folks are able to find ways to be more profitable and use that information as their core system of record. So it's exciting. We were at MJ BizCon for the first time this year. We'd never been before. So we had a booth and I would have bet any amount of money that we would have had a handful of people that would have come by. And it was kind of a nonstop, folks that were just jam packed the entire time. And certainly a number of folks that, had questions, had frustrations. A lot of folks, just want to be heard. A lot of folks have really, really valid points and areas of the product that caused them some frustration that, frankly, we didn't realize was something that was frustrating to them. So to get out there, to hear, to have that level of compassion and empathy is meaningful. And I mean it earnestly. I mean it genuinely. We really do want to do the very best we can for everybody in the ecosystem. And to the extent anybody has any questions, concerns, think something's broken, something can be better, I very much encourage anyone and everyone to reach out to me at at any point. Happy to have the conversation.
That's fantastic. And Michael, it sounds like, you're not just You're talking the talk, you're walking the walk here. You know, sounds like you're at the booth. It sounds like you're doing customer service calls. I mean, there seems to be a genuine want to better the industry through the Metric product. And you know, that's the starting point. It sounds like even the technical side has benefited from your leadership over the past year. So, you know, it's great to hear that. Is there anything else that you feel like, you know, cannabis professionals or cannabis investors, there's one thing about your platform that you just want to put out there, like, everybody listen to this. Let's fix this. It's there, but we got to get some education on it. What is that? What's the one part of your platform that's just like, use this?
For anybody that's looking to invest or start a business in cannabis, the fact that RFID tags are ubiquitous in cannabis is not, I mean, we certainly are an RFID company, but we're a software company that facilitates a number of different things, primarily initially for the regulator, but we're focused much more on the experience of folks in the industry and integrators. And the lack of the uptick on RFID technology is really, it's shocking to me. Walmart is the largest retailer in the country. They had a mandate about a year ago, and this is widely Googleable information, that every single package in their supply chain had to have an RFID tag on it, every single one. And they felt that their cost was, they felt they were going to save not only themselves, but also their suppliers at least 3 to 1. For the cost of the tags, and their tags are much, much more expensive than ours. that would require mandate by the end of the year, so by the end of 2022. There are a number of folks that are doing great things with RFID. There's just not nearly as much as I think folks could be doing with RFID. We're somewhat focused on maintaining our role as a, you know, kind of a regulatory and compliance provider. But there's a lot of folks that have built products out that leverage the RFID chip and are able to do wireless inventory, you know, being able to track your plants on an individual basis to increase yield by even as little as 5 grams is the difference between folks being on a per plant basis, is the difference between folks being, you know, successful and being profitable and not, and sometimes having to shut their business down, something that small. And so when you take a look at a plant and you're in a room or in a field, you know, you realize that not every plant's different, and people that grow will tell you that the genetics even, you know, kind of will evolve, you know, after 6, 7, 8 different growings, and different mother plants will evolve. And so being able to understand and figure out, like, if I add, you know, this much water at this time and this combination of nutrients, I'm able to increase my yield dramatically. That's huge. And you're able to do that primarily in a wireless way with no one touching it, with no added employees at all of any kind, because you have the ability to individually identify and track those plants. And, you know, folks just aren't doing that. And they're not doing what would need to be done with the RFID inlays and paying close attention to some of the folks that we partner with from a sensor perspective. I mean, being able to improve your yield is incredible. And you look at some more trees that are similar, where you track down to the plant or down to the fruit level, tend to be more of your rare or much more expensive plants, like, for example, orchids in Madagascar that produce vanilla are tracked in significantly more detail than anybody's tracking cannabis. And they really are caring about the size of the seed pod down to that level, and it's producing something dramatic. Their yield increase is nowhere near as beneficial to them as increasing yield in a typical cannabis producer by, you know, as I said, 5 grams per plant. And so it's just not... Wow. It's not being appreciated by everyone, and it really is incredibly dramatic, and it could make so many of these cultivators, as well as processors and distributors, so much more profitable simply by just embracing technology and not adding a single person. In many cases, you actually, you know, are able to reduce headcount.
Wow. All right, man. Well, you heard it from here. You heard it from Michael Johnson, CEO on Metric. How to use his, at least one part of your platform, man. I know there's a wide array of use cases there, but really appreciate your time here, man. I got one more question for you, and then I'm going to let you go. What's the next, and you can either take this industry-wide or metric-wide, what's the next catalyst? What's the next big movement for Metric, and or what's the next catalyst that you see in the industry at large that moves us forward? Yeah, I mean, are we all waiting for political catalyst? There would be my qualifier, but this can also be about Metric.
Yeah, I think international, people pay attention to it, whether it's international trade to and from the United States or international trade between Canada and Europe. We pay really close attention to it. We've had a lot of conversations with folks in Canada. It's, you know, their system certainly has some opportunities for improvement. And then you look at what's happening in Europe in terms of areas where different countries are looking at different levels of legalization. And so you have, in some states, you have oversupply, which will naturally balance just like anything else. But if you have the infrastructure in place in areas where you've seen more oversupply than others, like California, Oregon, Colorado, and the like, and you're able to actually do something with that infrastructure in terms of international export, I think that's going to be significant. And I think as the cannabis economy moves from the state level to the global level, there's going to be certainly quite a bit of opportunity for folks that have built things at scale to be able to kind of peddle their wares in that way. And that's actually going to create really unique and exciting opportunities for the smaller craft growers, which some of them are just really special in what they're doing. And they're going to be able to kind of stay a little closer to home and have something that doesn't necessarily have as much competition from folks that are producing at larger levels. And so we definitely look at ways that we can support and make that type of expansion possible from a compliance perspective to protect public health and certainly to provide the rails for success.
Awesome. Michael Johnson, CEO of Metric. Really, really appreciate your time today. It's really nice to catch up on what's happening over there. New leadership, it sounds like, are taking this company in a different direction, or at least a more innovative direction, we'll say. But honestly, thank you for your time. I do want to catch up down the road, and hopefully we will have you in Miami for more insight and thought leadership from you. But past that, my friend, thank you again, and we will talk to you again soon.
Likewise. Thanks so much.
All right, y'all. That is another episode of Cannabis Insider in the books. Two awesome interviews today. Michael Johnson, CEO of Metric, and Ranson Shepherd, co-founder and president of Cannabis. Thank you all again. Y'all, check out benzinga.com/cannabis. Aaron, pull that chat back up for me if you can. Benzinga.com/cannabis for all of your cannabis news throughout the day, and psychedelics news for that matter. We do some 30, 40 articles on the industry a day. Today was a pretty newsworthy day, so I definitely recommend going back through our app, Benzinga, in the App Store. You just scroll over to the cannabis news feed, and it's all cannabis news. Super easy, super fun. With that being said, tune in again next Tuesday. I think I'm alone by myself all again next week, so I hope you like me. If you don't, I'm sorry. With that being said, y'all, we will talk to you again then. Have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend, and long weekend for those who are taking the holiday on Monday. We'll be right back.